This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, the temperature's just right. Oh. We've had rain. That makes me in a good mood. Things are going well. When we get a little rain and it's not 105, I think we'll make it.
It's kind of like back to normal now.
Oh, yeah, we're back to normal, yeah. The rain makes me happy and, you know, changes my attitude. And that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. A little rain is good for the soul. It's really good for napping. It's great for nature. And with the cooler temperatures and we're kind of getting into that you can kind of like almost feel the fallness in the air because we're into September now. And that means, you know, fairs. And that means that, you know, Halloween is right around the corner. And that means the holidays.
Pumpkin time.
Oh, pumpkin time. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Mm.
And, you know, I hope it hasn't been too dry that the pumpkin patch doesn't do well. I'm hoping that the pumpkin patches are right on target again.
Yes. Yes. Pumpkin patches, corn mazes, all of these things that are fun for fall. That's on
right. Well, you know, we need some things that are fun. It's been a tough couple of years. You know, people couldn't go around other people. We couldn't do a lot of stuff. So, you know, we need to be out and about. And, you know, in the next few weeks, I'm going to talk about all the places to visit. You know, we've got rodeos coming up. We've got fairs coming up. State Fair of Texas is coming up.
Yeah.
They've already sampled all the new food fair. I'll be telling you what ones are going to be on the market this year and what one won. And Bandera's got a rodeo coming up. Things are looking up.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, we were all looking forward to summertime and getting outside and doing stuff and traveling and going places and kind of coming out of our cocoons. And now that all that's done and we're all back into school and we're all back into the regular routine, now we're always looking forward to all the fall stuff. Not only even just the fairs and festivals, but, you know, the foods and the recipes. And, you know, now we get to get into, you know, things like eggnog and spiced cider and, you know, things like that. Just the fall that give you a nice little warm hug, I guess, the food that goes along with it.
Because we can tell you're ready. When you start talking about the eggnog and the cider and all this, we know you're already gearing up for, I believe you're gearing up for Christmas, truthfully.
I might be skipping Halloween and Thanksgiving.
You might go straight to that. Oh, my gosh. You and the kids.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with holiday shopping. I mean, that might be a unique situation this year. I know last year was a little bit strange. I don't remember what the numbers were for holiday shopping and 'cause, you know, those, it's always the big time of year for, you know, that's why they have like Black Friday. But it seems like they don't have Black Friday anymore. Now they have like it's Black Friday all month long, and so they don't. I don't know if there's a shift or what's happening. But I've already seen, believe it or not, I have seen some Black Friday specials come on. I think it was on TV. I was watching something, and they had started talking about Black Friday specials, and I'm like, what? And this was like at the end of August, and I'm like, how can what? You got to be kidding me! What's going on here? So.
Well, I'm telling you, the retailers are going to have to come up with a plan to get people excited enough to get them in the stores and get them to buy things. Because, you know, everybody's habits have changed so much during this pandemic. People are doing different. They're buying different. They're not buying as much clothes as they were. And it's showing. Nordstrom is complaining. Even Target is complaining. And Target said, you know, they were so late getting all their shipments in, it really hurt them. Because, you know, everything was at the docks in California. They couldn't get the clothes here. They couldn't get the household goods. And when it finally came, the season was changing. So it hurt them a lot.
Oh, wow.
And everybody's complained about that. They couldn't get the merchandise till late. And now I've heard the story that some of the merchandise is so ugly, people are not buying it.
Really?
Now, I personally don't know that for a fact, but I've been told that some of the clothes, people went to shop, and it was so ugly they left without buying. Now, that's a bad thing.
Oh, yeah, that's not good. Man.
Now, women should always have their hands full when they leave the stores. And if that's not happening, that's going to hurt a lot.
Yeah, well, geez, I would have thought it had been like an economy thing. I didn't realize it was a fashion problem. That's different.
But I can tell you this, little kids back to school clothes was fabulous. People were buying that, and they were buying it big time. Now, you know, the little children go to private school, so they had to have certain things. Land's End, and I don't know what their sales are per year, but all the private schools use Land's End. And they do a tremendous business, you know, in kids' uniforms, kids' clothes. And this summer, even they were having trouble getting their clothes made, you know. And then locally, jeans, kids' jeans, by the time I decided to do it, they were out. I've never heard of anybody being out of kids' jeans.
Really?
I had a horrible time.
Wow.
Yeah. I went to three or four online, and they said, we will ship it to you by a certain time. I couldn't get it the next day. Usually, you know, anymore, they've got these special deals. You can get it the next day. And they all said, you cannot pick up at the store. No pickup at store. So that tells you the jeans were out. They were going to have to get them from the suppliers.
Wow, that's
yeah,
a different
it was going to have to come from the warehouses. And I was in shock that jeans, of all things, you couldn't get them locally because all of them had sold out. So they had a run on jeans.
Jeez. Wow.
Now, can you imagine?
No, I've never heard of that before.
Every time I would try to check out with jeans, it'd say, they'll be shipped in so many days. It wasn't, you can't come to the store, order and go to the store and pick it up.
Jeez.
So we know that kids' clothes, they ran out of a lot of things. Because so many people were having to shop.
You know, online shopping is great, but I tell you what I miss. I do miss, especially around the holidays, going to the mall and or going to even stores, but mostly the mall, where you have, you know, the food court and you have all the music and the decorations, and you just kind of like immerse yourself in the holiday season. And I'm starting to kind of miss that. I love, you know,
and the
shopping
big tree
online.
There's always that huge tree in
yes.
every mall. I love that big tree.
Yeah.
And then you have ice skating.
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
loves ice skating. They love to go ice skating. And a lot of this is going away, folks.
I know it. It's kind of sad.
You know, it is sad. But a lot of people are saying, we don't want to pay the big mall prices for rent. Like Macy's has now got the smaller stores in the strip shopping centers. And it works just fine. But everybody, a lot of them are struggling. You know, a lot of the restaurants have closed. We've still got restaurants closing all the time. I don't understand. You would think the pandemic's over. They made it through, but now then they're still struggling. People are not coming back and eating in the restaurants.
I would imagine, and I didn't really think about that. I'm just kind of like blurting this out off the top of my head, but I would imagine if even people did do like the takeout, you know, or DoorDash or, you know, something like that, people aren't in the restaurant to tip. And so I would imagine that would probably have an effect on what people make when they are working at a restaurant, which means they may start finding other employment, not inside restaurants.
Yeah, and a lot of them said that, you know, that the help is just not there. They're closing. I've seen signs closed due to lack of help.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's really affected. And yet Fort Worth has got a lot of new restaurants coming on board. You know, I know I read about three new ones. I mean, people are going out, and yet new ones are coming in.
Hmm.
So, you know, and I don't know what kind of restaurants they were. And then the health department is closing restaurants, 1, 2, 3. They've been making inspections. And, of course, they announce all these inspections. They closed the Domino's permanently. They found rat droppings in there. They closed it.
Wow.
And there was two other restaurants. They gave them a bad grade and said, you've got a week to clean it up.
Jeez.
So, you know, these restaurants, especially in a time like this, they need to be on top of it. The manager or the owner should be overseeing it, making sure it's up spick and span, clean as it can be, as clean as you would want to eat at your house. And they should be getting good grades. But lately, there's two or three every month that are getting bad grades and told, you know, you've got a week or 2 weeks to clean it up.
Wow. You think that's because of the help situation?
Yeah, I do.
Employees? Wow.
They don't have enough help, and the help they're getting, some of them are lazy. They're not doing their job.
Wow. Boy, that's an aspect I never thought of. Jeez.
Yeah.
I think we're starting
because
to...
Because I always read that, and I want to know, you know, if a restaurant is about to be closed because it's not clean, I don't want to go there.
Oh, Lord, no. No.
No.
Boy, it's almost like we're coming out of this, coming out of the pandemic with, you know, we went into it, you know, with all these fear of a lot of places closing, and they did. And then now that we're on the kind of like on the other side and people are like reopening or going back out again, now we're hearing about a whole new set of problems that have started to arise from it. So it's kind of like this weird phase one, phase two kind of thing. And here we are in phase two. I don't know. It's these are definitely different times. That's for sure. Boy.
And, you know, everybody's having to work through other problems. And I think they're just going to have to get a hold of their businesses and take control and don't leave it to somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to oversee it yourself. You can't just leave it to sometimes to the help because it's not their business. They don't own it. So it's not quite as important to them. But it should be because that's the way they keep their job. Is by doing a good job.
That is true. But most people, like you say, most people don't look at it like that. They don't have the same passion as the actual business owner to make it work. It's just like, I want my check and I want to go. And so, you know, when you have that kind of a position, it's just like, yeah, not really care if something comes, if you fail an inspection, say, I'll just go get another job. Whereas the owner, this is like, well, geez, if they shut us down, I can't go exactly buy another restaurant. It's a very different dynamic. Wow.
And they have a lot of money invested, so it's important to them, you know, to keep it fresh, clean, great food, and to get it out on time.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody's coming from a different perspective, but everybody ought to work together, keep the businesses going. And we don't realize lots of times if we don't go to these different businesses or we don't do business with them, it hurts their bottom line. So, you know, I'm kind of cognizant of that fact that a lot of them were doing poorly during this because people weren't buying from them.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a vicious circle.
It really is.
To stay in business, keep other companies in business, for everybody to make money. We've never had to think about that. We've always, everything worked out. Everything's always worked out. But then the pandemic come, and it has changed everything. It's changed the way we do business. It's changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
The stock market, let's talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it goes up a little bit, and then it just pancakes down. I mean, you know, and a lot of people are getting hurt. They told how many billion was lost this week in the stock market when it crashed again. It was billions that people lost. And, you know, you can't take that all the time.
No.
For the great big investors, they'll survive it. But the smaller investors, what are they supposed to do?
Yeah, there's not a lot of wiggle room. When it's gone, it's gone. There's not, you don't have that window. You don't have that, I guess, that grace period. I don't know what else to call it, but that grace period to rebound when something like that happens.
And when the Fed, you know, went up on so many basis points, it just cratered.
Yeah.
You know, everybody just, you know, stocks went down. There were so many that were down. It was just an amazing thing. And the losses were amazing. And then they announced this week that all the shots that people took, it has increased cancer by 143,000%.
Really? Oh, wow.
And I don't know how. There must be something in the dadgum drugs that is causing the cancer. I would not have thought about that. I would have thought it would have been, you know, pure. I don't know what it's made out of course, but they said it is the shots has increased the cancer risk 143,000%.
Really? You talking about the vaccines?
Yes, the vaccines.
Wow. I hadn't heard that. That's news.
Yeah.
Jeez,
and I go, holy cow.
Yeah.
It scared me.
Whew.
I go, oh my gosh. If you know, it's like this. If one thing doesn't get us, something else will. I mean, you know, we might as well just, you know, say, well, you know, I'm doing my best, and that's all I can do.
Yeah, just
I
roll
mean,
with
you
it.
Know,
oh, wow.
Just roll with it because we're not going to get out alive anyway.
Well,
you know,
that's true.
I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen.
We've always heard the expression, if one thing don't get you, the other one will. And now we're just living it.
we are. I mean, you know, hard times are a bonus, let me tell you.
No doubt. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Have you heard anything lately? Because I know we touched on this in a couple of months ago, but have you heard anything lately about the prediction for how things are going? Because we're kind of getting into fourth quarters right around the corner. And I know at one point that we're talking about, you know, recession and then super recession and then depression. And so now I'm wondering if, like, with some prices coming down, not all, but some prices, like gas prices, other prices, meat prices starting to come down a little bit. Is that kind of easing things? Do they think a little bit better maybe now for fourth quarter?
Well, they're saying it might not be as bad, but then there's people saying that 2023 will be bad.
Oh, really?
So, you know, I don't know what they know or what they don't know. It's speculation, but a lot of the economists have been on this week talking about it, about what's going to happen. But I didn't hear anybody say that it's going to be a fabulous time for the stock market. Didn't hear them say that. Some of them said that 2023 would be a down year. And, of course, every time anybody talks about the interest rates going up, the stock market just panics. They're in a complete panic. And, you know, it's not a good time to be in the stock market. If it was one of those years when things were going good, you know, people would be making a lot of money. I don't know if anybody that's made a lot of money in the stock market this year. You know, the people that are coming to me are telling me about their losses, how much they've lost. They've got to get out. We've had a lot of people take their money out of the stock market. They've come to us. We've done annuities for people. We've done life settlements for them. And, you know, it's going to be a lot safer than the stock market. And they're not going to have to worry or have a panic attack. I think that's why they're getting out. They don't want to go through this again. And a lot of them cannot afford the loss, let me tell you. You know, you've worked all your life. You're getting close to retirement, another 5 years or so, and you can't afford to take a loss. So, you know, whatever they've made up till now, they're just taking the money, getting out, and getting to safety.
It sounds like the uncertainty that people have felt for the last several months, if not year, it sounds like that's not going to level off anytime soon. And so, you know, with all that, you know, predicted, I guess, even if not having a prediction for the future is a prediction, because it's like, well, if people really don't know, then it's just like, you know, the risk is just it's too much. And we've got to at some point, I guess, stop the bleeding and, you know, essentially save ourselves and get into something a little bit more conservative. Is that kind of what you're hearing from people when they come?
Yes,
to you?
They're wanting to be a lot more conservative. You know, I told you we had a doctor come to us The other people are all in the oil business. They brought their money over. We're getting it situated for them. And the ones that couldn't qualify, that had, you know, like maybe $400,000, they're going into annuities. So they'll be safe for the rest of their life. Their money will always be there. And, you know, I was thinking about annuities yesterday. And you know, some of the things that really make an annuity good is the fact that it never goes down. And your principal's always safe. And you don't have to worry. You know, you've got all the goodies of a stock market without the risk. You know, you've got all the investments that have got the potential to make quite a bit of money, but they don't have that fall, you know, like you have in the stock market. No matter what happens, your account never goes down. So I was thinking about that yesterday when they were talking about the stock market and how much it had lost when it went down the other day and the billions that people lost. And I thought about that, and I said, you know, if they'd had annuities, it would have been safe. Their principal was not going anywhere. They would not have had a down day. You don't ever take a loss with an annuity. So I feel like it's a lot better place to be conservative is an annuity, especially when people get older. They should have some money, I believe, in an annuity. They may not own it all in an annuity, but they may want enough to always know that that part of their investment is safe. So I think it's just a lot of advantages. And annuities have improved over the years. And the fixed rate now in annuities is 4%. And some of it's 3, but a lot of it's 4 right now. So, and they'll guarantee that for 5 years.
So with an annuity, you can protect your principal, whereas you can't in the stock market.
Yes, that's right. You can protect your principal plus your interest. Once that interest is credited to your account, it never goes down. It locks it in every year. Once a year, they lock your interest in, whatever it is. And then the next year, the interest starts over. And the next year, it starts over. So you never have that worry about the interest falling. And then you can take 10% a year out after 1 year. And you may not want to take anything for 10 years or 5 years. But it's growing all that time. So that's what I like. The potential for growth in an annuity is great. So that's one of the things if you're not qualified for the other program. If you are, you know, you have to be worth $1 million without your home, or you have to make $200,000 a year.
You know, and, with that $1 million worth that you talk about, people sometimes forget about assets that they have. They may have a 401k that includes any kind of rental property, includes any businesses that they may own. It includes all those things, right?
Yes, it does. They may have horses, cattle. Those are part of your assets, your ranch, what it's worth. That is a good asset. You may own a business. I have several people that own their own business. Those businesses is part of your assets. They can be counted. You may have an IRA. You may have a savings account. Most people don't anymore, but you might. And so whatever you have, you add all that up and see if you're worth $1 million. You don't have to be worth $1 million if you make $200,000 a year. Now, if it's a joint account, you and your wife, it has to be $300,000. But if it's just you, it's $200,000 a year.
Do you have a lot of, like, husbands, wives, or, you know, two people in general that will come in to do a life settlement together? Do you have that happen very often?
Yes, and when they do, if it's a joint account, as I said, they have to make $300,000. But if they're worth $1 million, it doesn't matter what they make per year. So you can go either way. You can go by what you make, or you can go by your assets. And most of our people, you know, have $1 million in assets, so we don't even ask them what they make per year. But then a lot of people say, look, I make $200,000 a year, but I don't have $1 million in assets, which is fine. So we'll do it either way. You just must be qualified in one of those two ways in order to do a life settlement. And then you have to have a minimum of $100,000 to do a life settlement. And because if you're non-accredited and you get out here And first thing you know, you'll say, "Oh my gosh, I'm short of money. I need $50,000, or I need $25,000." So the government says you must be accredited to do a life settlement, and they want people that are not worried about their money, that have extra money, and that have emergency money. And you know, all accredited people have emergency money. I assure you, they always have other monies in the bank. They may have couple hundred thousand in their checking account. So you know, they always have extra money for emergencies. I always ask them, do you have emergency money? Do we need to take some of this cash and put in a checking account for you? And most of our people do not need it. They have plenty.
And these are all government regulations. This is not like Fay Bagby's rules. These are all government, you know, guidelines and things that they put in place to protect the investor.
That's right. And you've got to have things in place to keep people from making a bad decision.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, the risks, you know, and being accredited, and people kind of balance the two together, it's kind of like they weigh, you know, I guess, for lack of a better term, they weigh the pros and the cons. When you're accredited, a lot of times the main risks, yes, they're kind of a big deal, but they're really kind of minimalized when you lay out the fact that somebody is accredited and what a typical accredited investor looks like. So just because we like to go over them and it's important, what are the main risks with a life settlement?
Well, the biggest risk is it can go over and you'd have to pay premiums. Now, we're doing a better job on that than we were 3 years ago. We were not watching it carefully enough to how high the premiums were. And we didn't realize, you know, we used to say it could be 3%. It can't be. Now we've got where it's down to 2% or less. And it's working out fine. So your biggest risk is that premium. So when you do a policy, we always send you out an explanation how much a quarterly payment would be. If it's $1,000 a quarter, if it's $500 a quarter, or if it's $100, we tell you up front where you'll know, where you can expect it. Not every premium is going to go over. Not every policy will go over. But there's going to be some that the doctors call wrong. Because remember, this is human beings. And sometimes they're really sick today, and maybe they're not sick in 2 years. So we need to know that. We need to know what risk we're taking. And then lately, we've had some of the old policies maturing, which is good. We're trying to get them all to mature. And they will mature. We will get our money out of them, but they are late. And then the others are coming in early. We've had a lot come in early lately. And those people are getting paid. We've got two policies right now that are early that are going in their banks the next couple of weeks. So most of the time, you don't have to worry about the premium. But you have to know about it. You have to know that is a risk. The other risk is it is not liquid until it matures. So when it goes in the investment, it's not liquid anymore until it matures and we pay you. And remember, this is a life insurance policy. You always get your money. The life insurance company does always pay. So we know that that's a safe investment. And you don't have to worry when you're in a life insurance policy versus the stock market. There's a big difference between the stock market and a life insurance policy. And people need to think about that. It's not going to go down. They're going to always pay you the face amount of the policy. And that's where you're, and it's insured. I don't know if that's the right word. Assured, let me put it that way. You're assured that you will always get your money back when it's a life insurance policy.
Yeah, and the reserves that they have on hand are tremendous, much more than you'll find in any other institution. They have to have those legally. They have to have the reserves on hand.
Plenty of reserves. And then most of them have been in business 50 years, 30 years, or even over 100. The companies we use, most of them have been in business over 100 years, and they're worth $60 to $100 billion.
Wow.
That's a high number.
I can't even imagine. it's crazy. I meant to ask this earlier, but where are we right now with policies as far as maturing, what's on the horizon, things like that? Where are we?
Well, as you know, we had about between 8 and 9 million this year, this month, come in. We've now got 15 million in the bank, and we've still got another 2 million to go to the bank for people. So they're have lots of cash right now to invest. We've got 4 policies. We're waiting on contracts. As soon as those contracts get in, we'll be putting people in them. So we have 4 contracts coming. 2 of them are $2 million apiece. The others are like $500 and $250.
Jeez.
So we have a lot of good policies coming. The premiums are very, very low on them. You're going to love the premiums. You're going to like these investments. They're really good policies.
For new investors, is this a good, because I know in the last couple of weeks you've had several new investors come over and they were like, you know, I really want in. I've been listening to you for a long time. I'm tired of taking a loss. And they've been ready to go. Is this a good time for new investors to come in? Plenty of policies to get into, plenty of opportunities on the horizon. This is a good time for new?
There's a lot of opportunities, more than we've ever had. Our policies are better than we've ever had. I think that these are good policies. We have a new company, as you know, that we're using a lot of LEs from. This one company has actual scientists on board.
Really?
And I love that about them. I think their LEs are going to be something we're going to really like. When you've got scientists, the scientists have more knowledge about cancer than anybody in the world. So I think this is going to really pay off for us.
You know, a couple of years ago when you were talking about, the fact that, policies were, in case they could go over, you're looking at, around 3% ish for if they have to pay the premiums.
Premium?
Yeah, they're around 3%. It's hard to imagine even back then that they could be lower. And so now that you're, hovering around 2% and even 1% in some cases, that's amazing. Hard to imagine, even a couple of years ago how accurate the LEs were, that they could have been even tightened up, and now you've got a doctor on staff. You've got these new companies. You've got scientists who are looking at these things, which make them even a little bit more accurate. And it's hard to believe that they could have gotten any better. When we were talking a couple of years ago, but here we are now in another situation where they actually have. I mean, that window for variables has really kind of closed significantly. And so it seems like this is really, like you say, this is a great time to get into life settlements, because of the accuracy and the data that's available on the front end.
That's right. And, of course, every once in a while, there's somebody that really wants in a life settlement. They don't qualify. We have to switch them to annuities. But most people are qualified. They're getting in. We're going to get them in policies. We're getting money transferred. It always takes about 10, 12 days to get their money transferred when it's coming out of a 401k, unless they're writing a check. And most people have a 401k. So that's what we're doing right now. We're getting those transfers done. We're going to get them in policies as soon as we can. And it won't be all at one time, but we'll be getting them in policies as they come available.
So let me just ask the elephant in the room here. Let me address the elephant. For new investors that want to come over, and they're saying, Faye, I'm tired of losing money in the stock market. We got to turn things around. We want to get into life settlements. How long would it be? And I know this is a loaded question, so I know that on the front end, but they're going to be asking probably, how long would it be before we start seeing a return and start seeing profits?
Well, I'm going to say most policies are 24 months, 18 months, a few of 12 months. So I always tell them 2 years. Every 2 years, you should have something maturing. That's usually the way it works. Sometimes we've said that, and they'll have policy come due in 3 months. We bought a policy last week, and the man died within a week.
Ooh.
I mean, sometimes these people are cutting it too close this year. We've had 2 or 3 rescissions, and they're just cutting it too close. They want to sell the policy, and they don't realize they're at death's door right then. So we've had 2 or 3 that have rescinded. That set us back. We've got to put those people on a different policy. And I just put one of my customers in that policy, and the man died. It's just... sometimes this happens. But you were talking about premiums. One of the policies that I've got coming, It's one, let's see, 1/600 of 1%.
1/600 of 1%?
1/600 of 1%. 600% of 1.
Really?
So that is going to be the tiniest policy on earth.
Is that even?
So we hope nothing goes wrong about that policy. We hope it comes forward. Everybody's going to want to get in it because, wow. You know, 1/600 of 1% is nothing. I mean, it's a $2 million policy. The premiums are going to be like buying a postage stamp, you know?
Wow.
So we're looking forward to that. We're excited about it, you know, and all of these have low premiums. I'm really excited about that. There's no way in the world we can get hurt if it goes over.
Wow. I've never even heard of that kind of math before. I didn't even know that was possible. Wow.
Yeah, when the CPA presented it to me, I go, holy cow, this is great, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we liked the policy before, and then when I saw the premiums, I liked it even better.
Yeah, no doubt. Wow, that's huge. That's a big one. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
Well, I'm going to tell you two things this morning. The first thing is, I don't know if you remember, the movie Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
Okay. Gary Gaines was immortalized in that film, as you know. He was a coach that became so famous. You know, at first he played quarterback at Angelo State. He got his first coaching job at Petersburg High. He took three more jobs before he went to Odessa Premium in 1986. And then, you know, they made the movie. They followed him and the Panthers through the 1988 season. Well, Gary Gaines has passed away, and he was very famous, and he was the coach that made the stars of the Permian Basin, and he's just passed away, and he's also the first cousin of our CPA, Flint Gaines.
Really? Oh, I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring that up because he was telling me a lot of things about his first cousin. He said he didn't like the publicity. He didn't mind them making the movie about him, but he didn't like... all this, you had to go to all these press conferences and all that. He said he could have done without all that.
I'm sure.
he said he could do without all, but he said he didn't mind making the movie. He loved the game, but he said he could do without all that publicity. So I thought I'd bring that up this morning.
Wow.
He just passed away, and it was a great coach. They made a great movie about him. And everybody will certainly remember him.
Wow. Boy, I bet Flint's got some great stories about him. Jeez.
He's got some great stories, and we're going to find out about him, and then we'll tell you about him, okay?
Wow. All right.
Okay. Now then, my trivia this morning is on two things. First of all, the University of Texas, you're not going to believe this, owns 2.1 million acres of land across 19 counties in West Texas.
Really?
How many people knows that the university owns more land than most ranchers?
Jeez, I did not know that.
Nobody did. They own 190,000 acres in Pecos County.
Huh.
Now, everybody says, how in the world did a university become the owner of 2 million acres of land? Well, in 1839... at the urging of the president at that time, which was Marbu Lamar, when the Republic of Texas Congress decided to set aside, now this is 1839, they set aside 220,000 acres for an endowment of yet to be established a university. They're thinking about a university in 1839.
Wow.
And then in 1876, they added another 1 million acres. Then 1 million more in 1883.
Really? That
and
far
back?
And
they called it the Permanent University Fund.
Huh.
And now then what they did after that, They leased the land, thousands of acres, to cattle ranchers. But guess what? The mineral rights deliver a steady flow of cash to finance higher education in Texas, and has for years and years. They have more money than anybody. Can you imagine this? And now then, let me tell you the real story this morning. In 1981, they decided to diversify its income. And the University of Texas partnered with noted French winery, Domaine Cordier. And they said, we're going to plant vines and construct a state-of-the-art winery in Pecos County. The university brought in a group of French vendors who relocated from Bordeaux area to Fort Stockton, Texas. Now, this is the University of Texas going into business with the French to create a winery.
I never would have pictured this or imagined it.
I didn't even know the story. And they planned Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet, and Chardonnay grapes. They decided they would flourish in the Trans-Pecos if they watered it by drip irrigation. And it wasn't that far-fetched an idea. Grapes were grown in Pecos County 100 years earlier, and I did not know that. And they were watered by canals from Comanche Springs 100 years before that. So, led by the French on UT land, a vineyard sprouted in the Chihuahuan Desert. It grew to more than 1,000 acres.
Really?
Yeah. And then Domaine Cordier insisted only the best in every aspect of the operation. So first thing they did, no expense was spared. Even the tile were imported from France. I mean, they went all the way. Many of the grapes were pressed in stainless steel crush pads. St. Geneva also employed rotary presses. And the way that works, it is crushed by the weight of the grapes falling on their sides. So it's very gentle on them. And they think that makes a better grape. Now, this is 30 years. Can you imagine? So in 2005, after 30 years of operation, and it was purchased by Mesa Vineyards. Eventually, a series of events, including a late freeze in 2014, wiped out the entire grape harvest.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And the closures of restaurants during that time, it put them on hard times. But before that, they were so great, and the wine was so good, they were selling it to restaurants in New York City.
New York City?
In New York City.
I feel like all this has happened under my nose, and I had no idea.
Nobody knows. St. Geneva, I mean, here it was, 1,000 acres, Fort Stockton. They were giving cheers. They had a little bus that ran out there to give cheers. Everybody was doing good. And then in 14, the entire crop was wiped out, and this Mesa Vineyard Company apparently didn't have the money, so they filed bankruptcy. At one time, it was valued at over $9 million.
Wow.
And the sad part is that a liquidation company came in, purchased it for $1.4 million.
Ooh.
And they tore all the assets apart, and then they had a dadgum online bid for it. They said that really added insult to injury. And it's so sad to see a great winemaker like St. Genevieve's from 2003 to 2019 go down. And the guy that was their main man, he said the winery helped put Texas on the map. He worked at the winery for 16 years. And, you know, businesses do fail. But for Fort Stockton, the demise of St. Geneva really hurt the town. You know, the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce, they led cheers. Everybody did. And it made a lot of money. It was a stable business. It contributed to the economy for 30 years. But they went into bankruptcy. Everything's gone now. The university still owns the land, but what they spent all that money on in 30 years of good grapes is down the tubes. But I can't imagine that the university went into the winery business in Fort Stockton and used 1,000 of their acres, but they are the biggest landholder in Texas. They own 2 million acres of land, and they have more oil probably than anybody. And I don't know what the oil income is to the university, but I'm going to look it up. It's got to be millions and millions.
Oh, yeah.
Their endowment.
Wow.
Yeah, can you imagine? It's a big story, them having had a winery in Fort Stockton 30 years, very successful, and then one bad crop did them under because they'd sold to a different company.
Wow, that's
a shame. If the original company had been there, I think it would have survived. But they had sold it to that different company, and they didn't have the staying power.
Wow. And then it got all broke up.
One bad year.
Wow.
Yeah, and they broke the whole thing up. Fort Stockton residents are just, I mean, they're dismayed because they had enjoyed the notoriety, the income off of it, and people would stop off of Interstate 10. They'd go on the tours. They'd buy wine. They had some of the finest wine around. Because it was all French.
Man, that's really a shame. It's so sad that it just took one.
It took one bad year.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have staying power. I don't know what the income was, but it had to be tremendous. But then these people spent all that money buying the vineyard, so then they didn't have the extra money when hard time hit, and one bad year put them out of business. It's hard to believe.
Wow, and with that good quality, it makes it extra sad because it's not just some average whatever. It was a good stuff. They're selling it to places in New York City. I mean, that's crazy. It's just
They were selling to all these fine restaurants in New York because they had all the three kinds of French wine that the grapes were producing, and it produced for 30 years. The university was in partnership on it, and I don't know why the university didn't come to the rescue. I still don't know the story behind that, why they didn't put up the money and say, okay, here's a loan, on this vineyard for a year or two to get you past that one bad year when there was such a drought that it didn't produce any grapes.
Yeah.
I don't know the full story.
It seems like they would have been able to step in.
But they own 190,000 acres in Pecos County. One county.
Wow, it's fascinating that they have so much land. One, first of all, and that two, they had so much foresight. I mean, back in the 1800s, this whole journey. What 1880 was it? 1880?
In the 1800s, they started putting. Who would have thought? The president, a former president of Texas, said, we need to put some money aside for a university. I just can't imagine. It was 1839 when they put the first 220,000 acres into their endowment, and they didn't even have a university yet. Wow. I mean, they were thinking that far ahead. Then in 1876, they created the Permanent University Fund, and, they just kept adding to it. 190,000 acres, another 220,000. Then in 1876, 1 million acres was added. Then another 1 million acres in 1883.
Jeez.
You take 1 million acres. Can you imagine how much oil is on those acreages?
Oh, my Lord. No, I can't even imagine.
I mean, and they established... I can't imagine anybody being smart enough in 1883 to establish the Permanent University Fund for Texas.
I know. It's almost like they put the cart before the horse.
very far horse. Yeah, very far ahead. Because they're thinking way back then, we want to establish money, on this.
Jeez. So many times you'll start trivia and you'll start the story and I think it's going one way and it takes a completely different turn. And then I'm like, oh my, I didn't see that coming.
Well, you have to establish the fact first, how this started. It started with the land And Pecos County has a 990,000 acres, so I wanted to bring forth all the land that the university owns, and then what they did with it. You know, they said, well, we're going to do a vineyard. Why they did the vineyard, I haven't got to that yet. I don't know what caused them to say, we need to go to a joint venture. We'll put up the land and, you know, bring the people from France. They brought all these expensive people from France to do this, the experts. They didn't start with somebody in Texas. They hired all these people from France, and they brought the grapevines over. They brought everything, and it had to be the best.
Yeah, and it's there's no other situation, and I don't really live in that in the wine circle, but I would imagine that there's no other situation where you can actually produce French wine here. And not do it over in the south of France where they have the grapes and the land and the soil and all that. They actually produced it here. I mean, that just in itself is kind of fascinating how they were able to, you know, bring the vines, bring the people and recreate it, you know, in Texas instead of overseas.
And it was the biggest winery in Texas.
Yeah.
It was on 1,000 acres. Can you imagine?
Jeez. And yeah, you're right. I would love to see
stories about, and some of them have went out of business lately down there you know, because of the economy. They just couldn't make. They weren't selling enough wine during this bad economy when the virus hit, and they weren't getting as many tours. But can you imagine? They hired all the people. They wanted the best. They hired them from France. Then they put the best of everything in it. But they said the low blow for Fort Stockton was not only the bankruptcy. It was selling all this online. They didn't even come to Fort Stockton to sell it. Yeah. They just went online and sold it off, and they were horrified.
Yeah, that's adding insult to injury right there. Jeez.
And they had given them income for 30 years. They'd had great income off the vineyards, all the tourists coming. They no longer had the income. They closed it up. People now are not coming in off Interstate 10, probably.
I know that in past trivias, you've talked a lot about, you know, wineries in Texas, and that just fascinated me right there, and how many there are. But this is just a little bit different, and it's a shame.
This is a different story about what can go wrong. but you would have thought they'd had staying power.
Yeah.
It was old, it was established, but I don't know what they paid for it. Apparently, they paid a lot of money for it, and so they had no extra money when they had one bad year to keep it going.
Yeah, and I'm shocked.
And maybe they probably weren't as good of managers as the original people. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
They obviously didn't know as much as they should have about running a vineyard, because the other people ran it for 30 years, good years, bad years. It made money. It was doing well. It was worth $8 million.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
It's sad that somebody didn't have the university even had the resources or the urge to step in and save it, because it was doing so well. It was a proven success. I'm surprised.
And they had the best every faucet of it was the best that money could buy. They didn't do anything cheap. They talked about how expensive all the vats were, the presses, everything, because it had to be the best. The French would not do it any less. And everything they wanted to buy, they bought the best for this joint venture.
Wow. And it's all gone.
It's
nothing
just
left.
Sad. Yeah, nothing left. Shut down, and it's just gone. The building is still standing there, but there's nothing in it, nothing going. And it's such a shame to see a huge vineyard that was so successful 30 years and then to go down like that. And the university still owns the land, still got their income. And then they've got the ranchers who ranch pay them a lease for the land. So they're getting a lease for their land. They're getting the oil income, you know, for the university. So they have a 100% deal.
Boy, I'd love to see those oil numbers.
Wouldn't you like to see those? I'll look that up and tell you what the endowment is in Texas. But I know people have talked about the fabulous income off the wells that the university enjoys. And I don't know who they leased all their oil too. You know, whether it's Exxon, Chevron, I don't know. But I know they have tremendous income.
Wow. Wow, that's it's amazing. I mean, I'm fascinated by the income. I'm fascinated at the foresight. You know, when this whole thing started in the 1830s, I'm just fascinated that they produced such a great product of wine, and then it all just kind of one bad year, and then boom, it was all just gone. And I mean, there's so many different assets or aspects of this whole story that are just so fascinating to me. I wonder if there's a chance that it could ever be revitalized and brought back. I don't know.
I think somebody will buy it. I hope somebody buys it, restores it to its grandeur, puts new vines in. They may not come from France, but I think a really good company could come in, restore it, and it'd be the great winery that it once was.
Yeah. Boy, that would be nice if that came back. That would be really that would really be a true I guess it would be like almost like part two of trivia, where it's like, you know, here's
that's it. We do a part two of it. Absolutely.
Wow, that's awesome. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Before we wrap up, where are we for new investors if they were to come in and see you, say on Monday? Tuesday, because Monday's Labor Day. You close Monday for Labor
Day. That's right. Labor Day is Monday. We didn't even talk about Labor Day.
I know it. And you know how we always talk on Friday. People try to take half a day. They didn't try to do that yesterday, did they? Did you make them stay all day?
Oh, well, you know they did. I heard from a lot of people. I just got their emails. I wasn't able to talk to them because they weren't there. Let's face it.
Wow. we eke out every inch that we can out of a long holiday weekend. So on Tuesday, if somebody was to come see you, how long would it take to, say, maybe get all set up, get into policies? What's the process look like?
I think it'll be 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, not bad.
Because it's going to take 2 weeks just to get everything transferred, and it's always a transfer, it seems like. So you're looking at 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
From the time we start the transfer till we get it over, that's 2 weeks, then an extra week to decide what policy to put them in.
Should people do any prep work before they come and talk to you?
Make sure if they make $200,000, they don't have to do a thing. If they're not sure they're worth $1 million, add it up. Make sure you are if you're going that route, depending which route you're going.
Okay. And whether they want to go with life settlements or annuities or both, you're there to help either way. But they do need to start by having an initial conversation. And so I assume next week you've got some availability for new people to come talk to you.
That's right. And they need to send us an email and say, Faye, I need to talk to you. Call me back. Send me an email. Tell me, you know, what you would like to do. And we'll do it.
And they can also call, yes?
They can call.
Okay.
That's usually what they do. They call first, then they leave me their email address, and then I'll get right back to them.
Fantastic.
And they'll leave me their phone and their email, and then I'll get back to them.
All righty. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to call and make an appointment?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold. This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.